Welcome back, hour number three, right here on the Chris Gio Show, exclusively on TruthFrequencyRadio.com. My favorite hour, the commercial-free hour, and we have one of our favorite guests, Mr. Max Egan, joining us all the way from the Crow House. He has been on quite an adventure since last we spoke to him, and has also been right on the battlefield, on the front lines of the battlefield going on in Gaza. And it's amazing the courage that this man has had to go behind these lines and bring information out firsthand accounts of this information. But things are just getting worse and worse and worse. And I haven't been keeping too much up with it, but I've seen a few videos, and it is really sad. I saw a video of Israeli soldiers beating up and handcuffing two girls that seem to be about 10 and 11 years old. I mean, this is how bad it's gotten down there. Max, how are you doing?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on again, brother. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, mate. It's getting horrendous in Gaza Strip. It got sort of good for a while there. There was a unity government that happened in Palestine, but Israel will, of course, have no part of that, so they've really escalated things. There's been talk recently of some youths that were kidnapped in West Bank, and this is very likely just a staged event. It's very doubtful that there are any youths kidnapped, and they're just kind of using it as an excuse to go and destroy Palestinian homes in the West Bank. And they're also carrying out daily airstrikes against Gaza Strip while people are distracted with everything else that's going on in the world. That's what they do. While global events escalate, they tend to spend a lot of effort trying to exterminate Gaza Strip while people are distracted with other things.
I've noticed that. And now we're talking about very, very small regions here. What's stopping them from just releasing a bioweapon or something that just completely wipes them off the face of the earth? I mean, what's the constant conflict about in terms of we're looking at Israel as a superpower, basically, because they have the whole West behind them. The Arab nations aren't doing anything about it. Why delay this? Why draw it out the way that they're drawing it out?
Well, a lot of it, I think, is energy harvest, Chris. They enjoy it. They like torturing these people. They also use Gaza as a weapons testing area. I've found out from Israeli soldiers, they actually go in and they test new weapons on the people in Gaza Strip. And new tear gas and new this and new that. They just create some sort of a conflict so they can go in and test all their weapons. Plus, they can't just go and exterminate them because the world would notice if they did that. It's kind of been a slow kill. Like with Gaza Strip, they've just basically block the whole place off, put it under siege, and it's been that way since 2007, and they've cut off all supplies, and they're just letting the place slowly die. You know, another 10 years, you won't be able to live there anyway. It'll just be too polluted. But they can't, I mean, they can't just go and wipe them out because the world would notice too much. They've got to do things like stage this kidnapping, and then, like what they're doing in West Bank, apparently looking for these youths, they're just going in and they're just destroying homes. They're not knocking the buildings down, but they're going in and they're destroying everything inside the house. Breaking all the furniture, destroying all the beds, ripping up all the clothing, smashing all the plates and cutlery and just destroying everything. So the houses are just completely trashed. And they're doing it suburb by suburb. They've been going right through Hebron doing this, looking for these three missing youths, which nobody seems to know anything about, which has probably all been fabricated. And, you know, they can't just go and exterminate them, though. It's got to be done this way. And, you know, there's all sorts of reasons, mate, but a lot of it, they do test weapons in Gaza Strip. I know that they test weapons on these people, and it's horrendous what they go through, you know.
Let me ask you about the other side of the coin. Why doesn't some nation step in and liberate these people? I mean, again, we're dealing with a small region, not very many people when you think about the size of other countries. And we have the Arab League, for instance. Why isn't the Arab League stepping in to defend these people?
Well, because Israel's got all the weapons and so has the United States. And, you know, all of these Christian countries believe, it says in the Bible that you must defend Israel. You know, the right of Israel and all this sort of stuff. And everyone believes it. So they all defend Israel. I mean, Israel, even the actual Orthodox Jews say that Israel shouldn't exist. They're forbidden to have a state of Israel. The Jews are forbidden to have a state. It's land that's supposed to be granted to these people after the final battle. It shouldn't exist before the final battle. But so, you know, it shouldn't even really be there. But a lot of these Christian nations are just brainwashed and they just support Israel. People believe what the media tells them. They believe that the Palestinians are all terrorists and that Israel is God's chosen people and we must support them. That's just the way it is. And as far as the Arab world go, I mean, there's so much oil and money tied up between the United States and European interests and many of these Arab countries. I mean, countries like Saudi Arabia, this is such a corrupt country, such a corrupt government. And you talk about human rights abuses, you get most of them come out of Saudi Arabia. The treatment of women and everything in Saudi Arabia is shocking. And we don't hear any of that because there's all of these oil deals going on. Plus, I believe the Saudis buy a lot of U.S. debt from the United States as well. So there's all sorts of economic reasons why the Arabs don't go in and help them. And the Gazans, the Palestinians, the people in West Bank and Gaza, are just like forgotten people. They're forgotten people that are used for cannon fodder. They're used to inflame the Arab world, to keep the conflict going, to breed terrorism as well, because, you know, you get these kids, you brutalize them and brutalize them and brutalize them, and you turn them into terrorists. Of course you do. You get kids and you reduce them to the point where they just want to strap a bomb to themselves and go and blow somebody up because of all the brutalization that they've seen around them for their whole lives. You know, it's to create this whole situation. You wouldn't have the war on terror. You wouldn't have any of this stuff happening if you didn't have the situation in Palestine. That's what's been used to inflame the whole thing, you know.
Well, you're absolutely right. As you were speaking, I was thinking the exact same thing. If they locked me in a small area, denied me clean food, clean water, et cetera, you can call me a terrorist as well, because I would fight with the human spirit that's inside of myself for my sovereignty and freedom.
Well, imagine if you're a little boy though, Chris, and you see your father shot in front of you, and then the next year you see your mother shot in front of you, then you see your brothers and sisters blown up around you, then you see your best friend shot, then you see, you don't feel anything after a while. I mean, you cry for the first couple of times, but after a while you're numb. You don't care anymore. You don't feel anything anymore. And that's what's been done to these kids. And when they're waging war against Gaza, this is something people have to understand. They keep talking about waging war against the people in Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip is a besieged population. It's the world's biggest open-air prison. It's got 1.8 million people in there, and over half the population is children. So you're waging war against a population mainly of women and children. This is not a war. This is genocide. You need two armies to have a war. There is no army in Gaza Strip. There isn't even any weapons in Gaza Strip. You know, they throw rocks at tanks. It's ridiculous, you know. So people need to pay attention to this. And traditionally, when there's other major events going on around the world, such as what we're seeing with ISIS and all this stuff in Ukraine and Iraq and everything that's escalating everywhere else, usually when these sorts of events are happening and nobody's looking, everyone's distracted, Israel carries out major attacks against Gaza Strip while nobody's looking. So I'm just asking for people to keep one eye on Gaza Strip while all this other stuff is going on, because things are looking pretty bad there at the moment. I was speaking to a friend there yesterday, and he said there's daily airstrikes. He had a friend that he'd seen 5 hours before, received a direct missile hit to his car, and now he just looks like a hamburger, he said. And the nonchalant way he said it, oh yeah, my friend got blown up, you know, this morning, you know, as if it's just a daily occurrence, you know. You've got to understand what these people are going through. They don't feel anymore. It's just been this ongoing brutality, living from 1 minute to the next, never knowing when the next bomb's going to come over the wall. It's just outrageous what they have to go through. And when they retaliate, so this is what they do. See, Israel keeps pounding them, and then when they retaliate, Israel cries victim, and they send the army in. They say, we're being attacked by the terrorists in Gaza. And all they've done is they've had enough, so they've retaliated and sent a fertilizer-powered pipe over the wall or something. You know, the rockets that they send over are just skyrockets that don't explode. They can put a hole in your roof, you know.
Right. I've seen the videos, unfortunately. I've seen Palestinians throwing rocks at tanks, as you said. I saw one video where a Palestinian girl, there was Israeli soldiers firing into a school, and she walks right up to the soldiers and puts herself in front of the guns. And I guess because she was a female and she was fairly attractive, she was young, et cetera, she was able to get the Israeli soldiers to stop, because these are just kids themselves. I mean, these Israeli soldiers were like 17, 18 years old themselves. At least that's how they looked. But this is what goes on, you know, and here in the United States, a couple of cops get shot by a couple of wackos and the whole nation just goes crazy. But they have no idea what's happening on the other side of the world.
Yeah, it's a shame, mate. It is. It's terrible what these people have to go through. And so I'm going to try to get over there again, try to get over there in October. I'm not sure whether I'm going to be able to or not, but things are very, very dicey at the moment. I had heard that the border was a bit lax and you were able to get through. But, of course, Israel's made sure that this wouldn't happen. See, this is, like I said, this is because of the unity government. things were looking quite good. Things were looking peaceful. Once Fatah and Hamas joined forces and decided, look, we've got to put a stop to all this division, we've got to try to do something about the people, then things, you know, kind of relaxed, and Egypt opened the Rafah crossing and everything started to look good. And so, of course, Israel's staged this kidnapping and just gone hell for leather and made sure that the escalations not only, or the tensions not only increase, but you know, massively increase, you know. So it's all very contrived and it's all very sad. So I hope people keep an eye on the place.
The last major conflict we heard about, or at least that we talked in depth about on the show, was a situation to where there was actually a peace treaty that was being taken to be signed, and Israel turned around and firebombed a car as they were taking this document that was supposed to be signed to declare peace, a ceasefire.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what they do. They don't want peace. They do everything they can to prevent peace. The last thing they want is peace with the Palestinian people. They want to escalate the conflict. They've got to be seen as the eternal victim. This is what Israel does. You know, it's got to be seen as battling for its right to exist all the time. And that's a lot of what Palestine, the role that it plays as well. That's why they can't just wipe them out. They need them there. They need that enemy, that really close proximity enemy right there in their same country, you know. It helps Israel's cause, you know.
What do you think about Gaddafi's statement that JFK was assassinated because he was looking into Israel's nuclear program?
Look, I don't know. I don't know. I can't make that call. I wasn't there. Interesting. He could have been. There's a lot of reasons. JFK was, you know, rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. You know, he was an honest man, I think. So, yeah, there's all number of reasons why he could have been assassinated. It's interesting. He may have been. He may have been. I don't know.
I think there's some truth to it. And then when you take that information and context, then you start to realize their nuclear program goes back 50, 60, 70 years. And so they are very well armed with nuclear weapons, and they're freaking out because other people like Iran are trying to arm themselves as well. What do you think about that situation? Is Iran really building nuclear weapons over there, or is that just a reason for us to go in there? And on that note, let me also say this, that I think Iran has a right to have a nuclear weapon. Everybody else does. They should have one too.
Well, you know, I don't even think Iran wants a nuclear weapon. I mean, maybe they do just as a deterrent, but I think they're mainly after nuclear power. They want a power station. I mean, I think that's wrong anyway. I think anything nuclear is wrong. I don't think anybody should be pursuing any nuclear ambitions at all. I think we need to get rid of the whole thing. But that's another issue. But I don't think they're after nuclear weapons. I really don't. I don't think Iran. I mean, Iran hasn't attacked anyone in over 200 years. You know, yeah. The only war that they've had was with Iraq, and that was because kind of we organized that. You know, that was a Western creation. So I mean, they're just not a warlike nation. And with all this whole ISIS thing now, look, and even John Kerry saying, oh, maybe we need to negotiate with Iraq to deal with ISIS. I mean, come on, you know, this is such theater. They're trying to draw Iran into some sort of conflict. They've been trying to get Iran involved in a conflict for so long now, and Iran just isn't taking the bait. They just want to be left alone, you know. So, yeah, it's a sticky situation, mate. It's a really sticky situation. But I think nuclear anything is not the way to go. So, you know.
And then you have the Christian aspect of it, where Netanyahu gets up there on Meet the Press and tells Christians that you're not a good Christian unless you support us.
Yeah, and yeah, well, this is what I mean, yeah.
It's insane.
It's brainwashing. Yeah, you've got to support Israel. Israel's a terrorist state that shouldn't exist. It exists on stolen land. They're not even Jews who are there, not even Semitic Jews. They're all Western Europeans or Eastern Europeans that have all moved down there. I mean, it's a schmozzle. It's a complete schmozzle. Most of them are Khazars. They're not even real Jews, so. It's a complete disgrace, and yeah, that's the problem. See, they're brainwashed into believing that they must support Israel. We're a good Christian nation. We must support Israel, and that's all that Joe Public out in the suburbs knows. They don't hear anything else. They just look at the ball game and go to work and do whatever they have and watch a little bit of news, and that's it. They don't care. They don't know. You know?
They're not understanding that Israel has Palestine living in an apartheid state. They don't understand that. They think apartheid is all about South Africa and that apartheid could never exist outside of South Africa. That's not true. What Israel is doing is the very definition of apartheid.
Oh, it is, absolutely. There's two standards in Israel. So you can't have a Jewish state. You need to have Israeli. If Israel is going to be there, it should be an Israeli state that recognizes all people. And they'll say, oh, we are. We're an Israeli state that recognizes all people. But this is a whole Jewish national thing. And you can't be an Israeli national. You've got to be a Jewish national. And you've got to have nationalism to have rights. I mean, this is the way it works. It's a two-tiered legal system. The law of return and all this sort of stuff. Anybody who if I was a Jew here in Australia, even though I was born here and I have no ties to that land at all, I can go. I can give up my house. I may be living in a beautiful house here that I own in Australia. I could give it all up and I could go to Israel. I could steal a Palestinian's house and they will give it to me and I have a legal right to claim that house from a Palestinian. Yep. Yeah, but I've never been there. I don't have any claim to that. And I live here in a beautiful house. But I can go there and steal someone else's houses and they will welcome me to come and do it. What's all that about? You know, and that's what people are doing. People are leaving Canada, they're leaving here, they're leaving other countries, they're all going to Israel and they're stealing other people's homes.
Right.
And these people are just being dispossessed and people aren't thinking about that. They're just saying, oh, this is our traditional homeland. And what if I came to your house and said, look, this is my traditional house. It says here in this book that I wrote, so you have to leave now, Chris, and you have to leave, Sherry, because this is my house.
Native Americans could have a field day over here with that stuff. They could say, oh, well, my ancestors lived on this land for 10,000 years. You're not allowed to live on this land.
Exactly. So that's what's going on there. People are just being dispossessed, and they've got nowhere to go. They're just pushing them out into the desert. And it's shocking that the amount of Palestinian refugees that continue, it's just shocking. And with what's going on now with this whole escalation of conflict that Israel's doing over there now, they're just creating more and more refugees. So therefore, they're creating more and more terrorists. You know, more and more dispossessed people, more and more people that have lost all reason to do anything sane or rational, more people that are driven to the point of desperation. It's all contrived and it's all they're doing, you know, and it's got to stop. The world needs to pay attention.
Well, in looking at this recent event, I don't even know if it's real or not, where apparently three Israeli teenagers were kidnapped by Palestinians. So they go around and completely tear up people's homes looking for these lost children. And I don't even think that there are any lost children. I'm starting to wonder, is this all fake so they can get away with attacking them relentlessly?
Of course
it is. Of course it's all fake. You know, there's no way that the Palestinians would have done that. What would be the point of doing that? This is the retaliation that they get for doing something like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, look at the life expectancy for Israelis versus Palestinians. Israelis, it's like 80, 90, even 100 years old. Palestine, 40 to 60.
Yeah. It's shocking. And it's because of this unity government agreement, because tensions had decreased. Things were starting to look a bit positive for Palestine.
Right.
So they've done this to make sure that it just gets worse.
That's like an abusive spouse or an abusive father or mother who abuses you and then sees that you're doing well in school, that you're doing a little bit better, so they come in with something else to just grind you into the ground.
Yeah. This is what they're subject to all the time. This is the type of life that they have to live. And it goes on a daily basis. This is what it's like to live in Palestine.
Honestly, I can't see how Christians can support this. I really can't.
I was just thinking the same thing. You know, we've talked about religion over the past couple of months on the show, and we always go back to the Bible, the horrible atrocities, the slavery, the infanticide, the genocide, raping women, and you treating them as property. And, I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. And I don't understand how people justify that, but they seem to justify it. Like, I talk to the hardcore Christian people, and they will justify the slavery and infanticide and horrible acts and say, well, you know, and give some reason. I'm sure that the same line of thinking goes to the support of Israel.
Well, yeah, I mean, but a lot of them just don't know. They just don't know. They listen to the evangelists on TV, and these guys are all 100% support Israel. And they just don't know. They don't get the real information. They don't listen to shows like this. They don't go there. They don't go to and look at places like maybe Press TV, the Palestinian newspapers. You know, Palestine doesn't have a voice, an international voice like other people. And you mentioned the word Palestine, and it's just, they say, oh, terrorists. And even when you look at all this ISIS stuff, there's all this subliminal stuff. You look at the guys in Iraq at the moment that are saying that they're ISIS, which is, the CIA's latest boogeyman. I mean, let's get real with all this.
Right.
These guys always got all their faces covered, and a lot of what they've got their faces covered with usually are Palestinian cloths. Now, these are apparently Muslim extremists in Iraq. Why are they wearing Palestinian cloths, okay, on their heads? They're doing it so that it puts that subliminal message in you. Palestinians are terrorists. Palestinians are terrorists. All terrorists come from Palestine. That's why they always dress these people in Palestinian cloths. Even if they're not from Palestine, they're in some other country. They make sure they've got that black and white or red and white Palestinian cloth on. You know, because that is becoming the international symbolism of terrorism, you know, and it's a subliminal program they're putting into people just to make sure that people view Palestine as terrorists. That's what you talk to your normal person in the suburbs in any Western country, people who don't listen to alternative media, and you mention Palestine and immediately it's terrorist. That's what people think about straight away. That's the association, you know. And they do it with ISIS now. You have a look at the pictures of ISIS, and you notice that they're wearing Palestinian cloths. A lot of these guys have got Palestinian cloths wrapped around their heads. Why?
This is really heartbreaking, Max, because when I think of Palestine, I think of small children, I think of women, you know, and maybe there are a few people there, and rightfully so, that are the freedom fighters that are fighting, you know, this oppression. But how can you look at a state like Palestine and go, it's all terrorists? There's women and children there. There's people, you know, college kids. I mean, you were talking about this yourself. People that just want to go and have a cup of coffee, then go to school and try to make whatever they can out of this little cage that they've been put into.
Yeah, I know. That's what it is. It's shocking. That's what it is. But unfortunately, this is the way people think of it. They think of terrorism. And it's the programming. It's subliminal programming. Like I said, you see all these Islamic jihadists and you see these ISIS and you see everything. They've always got Palestinian cloths on. All of them, you know, so it's a subliminal program. It just puts it there in people's minds, and people see that cloth and they think, oh, you're a terrorist supporter, you know, and this is the Palestinian national emblem, you know, so, you know, it's a program, Chris. It's very clever the way it's done, but people just don't think about it. They just see what's on the surface. They listen to what the talking heads on the news tell them and they believe it. Goes in, they go back to the ball game and they go back to their beer or whatever, and they just don't consider reality at all.
Wow. Let me ask you this. Does religious terrorism, in your opinion, does it actually exist, or is it all people who are fighting for their homes, people who have had their, as you said earlier, their parents shot in front of them and they go out against the oppressors? Or, I mean, is there really a sect of people out there that believe that they have to exterminate everybody based on their religion, who are not Israeli? Because we know the Israelis already believe that. They believe they have to exterminate the whole world based on their religion. Up is down and left is right. It's amazing.
It is. It is. Look, there are probably religious extremist groups out there, yeah. But the conflict between Israel and Palestine has got nothing to do with religion. And what's going on in Palestine has nothing to do with religion. It never has. People think, oh, Muslims and Christians, and they're always fighting each other. No, it's not about that. It's about land theft and genocide and displacement of one ethnic group over another. That's what is going on in Israel and Palestine. It's not about religion at all.
See, I would disagree with that. I would say that the Israelis, they really do believe, according to their Talmud and the Zionists, they really believe that everybody else is goyim and everybody else has to be enslaved because it's their divine right to do what they're doing.
Well, yeah, I guess from their perspective, religious supremacism does play a large part in the Jewish psyche or the Israeli psyche, I suppose. But that's not the reason the Palestinians are fighting. They're not fighting because it's a religious war. I mean, because it's not a religious war. It's about land theft. Maybe right. That's the motivation in the minds of the Israelis, that they are God's chosen. They have a right to do what they're doing. Maybe you could view that as being a religious thing. To me, it's brainwashing more than religion. It's mind control, you know.
It is. We can go back to the Bible too for a moment, and you know, I don't understand how Christians follow along with this, because if you really read the Bible, The Bible pretty much echoes the Talmud. It said that the Jews are separate. They're God's chosen people. Everybody else is there to serve them. For instance, in slavery, which is in Exodus, it talks about if you're a Hebrew indentured servant, then you're treated differently than the rest of them. Anybody else is a slave for life and is passed on through inheritance, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're a Hebrew slave, you're freed after 6 years. It just goes to show the supremacy there. And all of these people go along with these religions, and they don't realize that they're not part of the group. They're not God's chosen people. They're the ones who are being enslaved by God's chosen people, and they still follow so blindlessly.
It's bizarre, really, when you look at the whole thing. Like, if you really go back and look at the region of when all of this stuff was done, and who these God's chosen are, and all of this sort of stuff, you know, the certain line, the line of, you know, the line of Shem, and, you know, all of this sort of stuff. It's definitely not the people that are there now. There's a good chance that it may have even been African Negro people, or perhaps Palestinian people, who were the actual descendants of these people. So when you look at the black African Negro race, these people are kind of like Morse Israelites, really. They sort of come from that area. Very likely it could have been them. They could actually be God's chosen people. How would it be if it was the Negro race who was actually God's chosen people? That people, you know, it just all got displaced because when the region got taken over so many times. But really, when you look at the origin of the black race, it's basically around the Israeli area. You know, Morse Israelites, these people are. So it's an interesting concept, you know, who the real God's chosen people could be. Could actually be Hamas, or it could be some African Negroes, but it's definitely not the white Europeans who are claiming that it's them. So it's an interesting thing. It really is.
No, you're absolutely right. And there are some groups out there that believe that exactly what you said. There's one guy in particular. I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was making big impacts and big waves on Coast to Coast and everything, and then he all of a sudden switched to this whole black Israelite thing, and the black people are the ones who are God's chosen people, and everybody else is Goyim, and blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, whoa, 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 this is more divide and conquer stuff. But you're right, there are groups that actually believe that.
Well, there are. I mean, there's a chance. I mean, you've got to look at the region. It went through so much stuff. And really, when the Arabs came through and converted everybody to Islam, everybody in the old area of Israel, like centuries ago, when they came through, there was the caliph came through and everyone converted to Islam. All he basically did was come and say, look, you know, everyone's got to convert or we're going to kill you. And if you convert, you don't pay tax anymore. So everyone just converted. No one had a problem with not paying tax, you know, so. Who were the people? Where did they go from there? They could have become Hamas. They could have gone down into Africa. Even when you look at the whole Egyptian culture and the whole Egyptian civilization, this was all built by black people. You look at the Sphinx. You look at all the Egyptian carvings of all the people on the walls. They've all got dark skin and big lips, don't they?
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? These are African. Look at the Art Narkin. There's even the thought that Art Narkin looks like Barack Obama. Why? Because he's a black man. Right. Narkin was a black man. These were all black people who built all of these pyramids and all of this stuff. Try to tell that to the Egyptians. They don't like that. They don't like you to try to tell them that this was all built by the Negro race, because it was. And that's what all the carvings and paintings show. They show Negro people. You know, so, you know, history is very, very different to what we've been told, Chris. So these God's chosen people that came out of this area of Israel could be any number of people, but they're definitely not the Europeans that are there now.
If we can go off topic for a little bit and get a little more esoteric, what do you think is at the base of all of this? You know, you said it was the black race that built the pyramids, that there is a God, that there's a God's chosen people. Who are these people actually following? Is it some extraterrestrials who landed here at one point in time?
Well, I don't know whether, like, God's chosen people. I don't know if there is a God's chosen people. It's just that if you look at the whole, you know, the land of Israel was promised to this particular group. That's who we're referring to as God's chosen, in inverted commas. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But where does it all come from? I mean, I don't know, man. History is very, very different. I've spent years trying to figure out what actually happened with history, and all I can do is figure out that, well, I'm never going to know. I can spend the rest of my life trying to figure it out, and I'm still never going to know. I think that we need to deal with the present situation that we're in, and once we do, once we can come into our power and reestablish ourselves as humanity and you know, get some sort of a respectful society happening, I think we'll find out all of these questions. I think all these answers will be, you know, they'll come to us. There's probably a lot of stuff hidden in the Vatican. There's probably a lot of old books and a lot of old knowledge that's hidden around the place. If we could create a respectful enough society, we could have access to it all. You know, I mean, wondering who's at the bottom of it all and where it all comes from, and ETs and Archons, and I mean, you know, you could go down any number of rabbit holes, Chris, and come out at the other end and still not be any wiser, you know?
Right, right, of course. There was a story that I just came across, and it seems to happen about a year ago, because I remember when they recalled all the ambassadors. But supposedly they found a Vimana, and I've heard two different versions of the story. One is that it's in Afghanistan, the other that it's in India. But there were supposedly 8 Marines who went down there to recover it and were just missing. They, you know, nobody knows what happened to them. They just disappeared. But at the same time, they had all these secret meetings and whatnot. Have you heard anything to that effect?
Look, I've heard rumors and hearsay, but nothing concrete.
Okay. I just came across it yesterday. I thought it was pretty fascinating. You know, the physical stuff, you're absolutely right. It's something that we need to address, and we need to resolve what's going on in this day and age. But I think a lot of the answers lay in history, in what's been occulted from us and what's been hidden from us. So that's why I always tend to go back to those kind of subjects, because the answers have to lay there. I mean, there's a point to all of this, and even if we don't understand it now as a generation, it's still embedded in our DNA somewhere. It's this genetic memory that keeps these people doing what they're doing for some strange reason.
Yeah, well, you know, like it is important that we do discover our past, but it's figuring out how to do that. I mean, I even wrote a book on trying to figure out what happened in the past, and, you know, because I think it's important, I really do, but trying to figure out how to discover it is the question. How do we get that information? Because all we've got is we can go out and dig around and look at these old rocks and stones. We can go to the pyramids and we can scratch around. You know, we're not permitted to go to so many areas. There's so many things we're not allowed to look at because of certain authorities. So we've got to find a way of getting access to all this stuff. So it's always come down to me, we've got to reshape society. So we've got to reshape our consciousness. Once we reshape our consciousness and start respecting each other, we start changing society from the grassroots, from the ground up, and things will change by default. It's like, you know, with people wanting to bring in new systems and things, you know, like even with the Ubuntu and all this sort of stuff. I mean, I don't think people will go for it. I really don't. If you're going to try to bring in a system that doesn't use money, people just aren't going to go for it. It's going to be too alien for them, you know. But if we could create a respectful society and actually start respecting each other and treating each other in Lakesh, then society would remold itself by default. You know, if we started operating according to moral parameters rather than economic and legal parameters, society would remold itself by default. It would just be an organic thing. We wouldn't need to create any transitional system. It would just create itself. A new system would create itself. We'd eventually get back to the point of self-governance that we should be in, you know. I don't think I think trying to design a way out of things is counterproductive. I think we just have to let it be organic. We have to start it from a grassroots level. See, if we did all of this information about the past, it'd all come to us. All of these things would open up if we started respecting each other. There'd be certain people along the way who would try to maintain authority over others, but eventually it would fall away. We just wouldn't respect that authority. We wouldn't adhere to their rules, you know. And we'd have the strength of community to be able to step away from their rules, you know? It's all got to come down to respect, Chris. I think that's how we change everything. It's got to be done from the grassroots. We've got to change our perspective and then apply that to the world around us. This is what I've been trying to share with people for the last 6 years. I really think that's the only way out, you know? Too many people are looking for someone to come along with a new idea for them to follow, rather than them coming into their own power and following their own ideas, you know. Once we do this, I mean, all of these things will become apparent by default. And that's the only way we're going to really discover our past, I think. We can go and scratch around in the dirt all we like. We're never going to know. We're going to spend our lifetimes wondering. We're never really going to know. We have to figure out what is the problem. How do we How do we get consciousness back into a state where it would simply open up and blossom? We have to figure this out, you know? So it's got to start at a grassroots level. It's got to start with the individual, you know?
Right. You're absolutely right. There are a lot of forces working to keep this information occulted and hidden from us. I was also looking at Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia, and people supposedly found this altar that Moses had built, but the Saudi Arabian government won't let anybody look at it. They keep it locked up. You can see it from the outside, but that's about it. And it's like, well, if you have such an important site, why not let the world see it? China, for instance, has pyramids all over the place, and they will not let anybody investigate them.
Exactly, because they don't want people to understand the past. And all these things are rabbit holes as well. I mean, you'll go down, because it's all so secreted, I mean, you can go and investigating this altar that they found that is apparently Moses' altar. I mean, you'll spend the next 5 or 10 years trying to figure it out because they won't let you get to it. You know what I mean? There's 5 or 10 years of your life gone, and it's another rabbit hole with another almost maybe answer that was never quite figured out because we never got access. They do this. They create all of these different rabbit holes for us to get caught up in. And this is a possibility, and this is a possibility, and that's a possibility, and it's all possible, but we never really know because we never have access. So how do we get access? We need to break down the barriers in our society so that they can't put these rules in place. You're only going to get that if you've got a respectful society, society that doesn't judge each other by fictitious artificial parameters given to them by someone else. You know, I mean, it's a sticky situation, mate. We've got a whole planet under mind control here. It's a really, really, it's a hard one to deal with. It really is. I've been trying to find the little key that's going to open the lock in people's minds for 6 years. This is why I've done the same show virtually for the last 6 years. I've been virtually doing the same show for 6 years, trying to say the same thing in different ways, trying to wake people up, you know, trying to find that little key that's going to unlock that mind, you know. It's an interesting situation, brother. It really is. I mean, it's like a fractured consciousness just eating itself. It really is human consciousness. It's a bizarre state the world's in. It just seems to be getting worse. I don't know. Like, more people are waking up, but the global situation is just getting absolutely chaotic. I mean, I don't know whether you're feeling the same way, but it just seems to be turning into complete madness, this planet.
I feel that we have ascended into the higher dimensions. And all these people that were saying, we're going to ascend, we really are. It just didn't happen on one particular date. But what's happening is that the third dimension is also overlapping with the fifth dimension. So on one hand, we are all more intuitive. We are all more awake, aware of what's going on. But on the other hand, the third dimension is still fighting for control. And it's really ramping it up. And what we're experiencing now is the death throes, like when the body's shaking as it's dying, of the third dimension. But this is when everything is getting the most violent because the body is dying away.
Yeah, I guess it could be, but it's a cacophony at the moment. It is. I mean, the global situation is just out of control, and it's just everywhere, every single country on the planet. We've got so much to deal with in every country, plus this whole global situation, the whole Ukraine and ISIS and, oh, my God, Fukushima. I mean, it just goes on, doesn't it?
The problem with the news, and Alan Watt actually brought this up on our broadcast the other day, he said, you know, what's the point of covering the news when most of it is fake?
Exactly.
He's a very good point.
Exactly. Exactly. You talk about what they're talking about. It's all fiction anyway. So, yeah, it's unreal. It's all theater. It's absolutely theatrical what's going on, mate. It is. But, I don't know. Maybe they're just ramping it up so much, trying to keep people so distracted from this awakening that's happening. Because people are coming online. More and more people are coming online. You know, I can go down to the supermarket now and overhear people in the aisles talking about government corruption, you know, in middle-aged people that I'd never expect to be talking about this sort of stuff. So people are waking up. The more they do it, the more it gets in your face and the more people wake up. So it is happening. But I just wonder where it's all going to lead to. I wonder what people are waking up to and whether people are waking up to the fact that we don't really need to fight anyone. We don't really need to battle anything. All we need to do is change our perspective, and everything will change by default once we do that. You know, that's what I'm hoping people will see anyway.
When we moved to Colorado, the first person that I met was this 80-year-old woman, and she looked about 80 years old at the store. And she comes up to me randomly and she says, "Did you know the mountains used to be green when I was growing up?" And I said, excuse me? And she says, yeah, you notice how they're all yellow and brown now? It's that stuff that they're spraying in the sky.
Yeah, there you go, you see?
Yeah, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be telling you this. You're telling me?
Yeah. Yeah, people are waking up. Geez, they've been ramping up the spraying here too, mate. Like, really, we got this whiteout all the time. The skies are just this hazy whiteout, you know. It's shocking. It really is.
It is. It is. How was your trip to the Amazon?
It was good. It was good. I'm working on the film. I've got so much more to do. I've been so busy, and we've had so much going on here with costing gas battles and all sorts of stuff. So it's been full on. I've actually just done my last radio show for at least a couple of months because I've got to, I want to work on the film. I want to get the film finished. And I've also got a lot of speaking dates coming up. I've got to go to Portugal to speak at the Boom Festival, which is going to be fun. And it's in August. And then I've got some dates in England and a few speaking dates around Europe. And then, as I said, I'd like to try to get into Gaza in October if there's any way possible. If the borders open and I'm able to get in, I want to make another documentary in there as well. But it was nice to go back over there. There's a lot of bad stuff going on over there at the moment in the Amazon. There's a lot of decimation of tribes. There's new laws that have been passed. Mining companies and all this sort of stuff have been given permission to go in and basically take out a whole bunch of uncontacted tribes, you know, like uncontacted people living in the jungle, you know, uncontacted natives. The Peruvian government has actually given approval for the expansion of this gas project into the lands of these uncontacted tribes, and they're just going to wipe them out and decimate them, basically. So this is pretty bad. So I want to go and get this film on the road and try to get some attention on this, what's going on over there as well.
Oh, man.
Definitely. That's horrible.
Well, it is. It's the Camisea gas project. And, there's been like international, even the United Nations and international human rights organizations have been condemning it, but the Ministry of Culture has just basically given the gas companies the go ahead to go in. They're actually going to flood this reserve, this Nayunanti reserve, which is located about 100K from Machu Picchu, I think. And there's a whole bunch of uncontacted tribes living in there. It's going to flood the whole region and put a dam in there and all sorts of stuff. So it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. It's breaking all sorts of international laws and everything, but the Peruvian government's just, they don't care. They're just going ahead and doing it anyway. So, this is some of the things I want to try to deal with Full Circle Project. But I mean, there's so much, Chris. There's so much. I mean, you know, with the project, I mean, I want to save the world, but there's so many aspects to it. You know, where do you start? Where do you start? I mean, even going and saving these tribes, that's just one thing. You know, there's so much more. There's so much more land being cleared in other regions in the Amazon. And then when you've got the situation in Gaza and Palestine and Europe and Ukraine, I mean, there's so much going on. Africa, I mean, where do you start? The people here, the indigenous people here in Australia, the refugees in the camps here in the center of the country. I mean, there's so much going on, Chris. There's so many things to deal with. So,
and then we have the immigrant situation here in the United States. We have a really bad border situation right now where they've got 46,000 children that have come over the border since the beginning of the year. And they try to tell us, oh, well, we didn't know that these people were going to come over. We had no idea. We're completely caught off guard. And then it comes out that, yes, they did know about this. And, yes, they did hire people and prepare for this. And not only did they prepare for this to happen and they knew this was going to happen, but the cartels are sending a bunch of children that are in their drug gangs up here as well to infiltrate our military, our police departments and all of that stuff. And so in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to have these illegals that are gang members that behead people in charge of our police departments.
Well, that sounds interesting. It sounds like you've probably got that already in the States. I mean, the police you've got over there leave a lot to be desired.
Yeah, so, they are pretty bad.
Max, we've got a question from a listener. What are the skies like in Israel as far as the chemtrailing and things like that? Are they pretty clear skies?
Beautiful, clear skies, mate. Beautiful, blue, clear skies. No chemtrails in Israel.
Wow. Huh. That's funny.
Not that I've seen, anyway.
That's hilarious.
It just goes to show, you know, yeah. They're spraying us like roaches because they do believe we are roaches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's something that if you look at the clip that I did with Ken O'Keefe when we were, that's one of the first things that Ken said in the clip. Look at the sky, beautiful blue skies. Why are there no chemtrails in these skies? You know, and that's what it's like over there. That beautiful deep blue that we used to have in the sky. That's the skies over Israel and Palestine. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you your opinion on Antichrist, because it looks like Israel is using Revelations as a playbook. Do you think that we'll see some kind of Antichrist figure, or will they continue to say, you know, or let people think? They don't even say it. They just let people think, oh, Bin Laden's the Antichrist, or Obama's the Antichrist, or, you know, many of them come and go so Israel can continue their program. Or will there be a Battle of Armageddon in your opinion?
Look, you know, Armageddon, like the apocalypse and all this sort of stuff, you know, the unveiling. I don't believe in the Antichrist, okay? I mean, the Antichrist would be someone who looked like the Christ, who appeared to be the Christ anyway. It wouldn't be the big king of evil. It would be someone who fooled people into thinking he was the second coming, okay? That's who it would be. But I don't believe in the whole biblical thing. I don't believe Jesus was the Son of God. I don't believe anything that's in the Bible at all, okay? I'm just not a Christian. I don't buy into any of that stuff, and I don't buy into the Antichrist. I don't buy into the devil. I don't buy into any of that stuff. I don't think there's a big evil Satan. I don't buy into it, okay? So I don't think that, I mean, they may use it. They may use that script. They seem to be. I mean, that's what Revelation is. It's a script. I call the biblical, concept really a pathogen, the religious pathogen that, allows the world to be destroyed around you because it has to, because it says so in the book, because Superman is going to come and save you at the end. So it's all good. You know, people use it to just allow the world to be destroyed. I just don't buy into any of it, Chris. I think it's a book of fiction. So.
I'm right there with you. And that's why we've been kind of on a crusade, for lack of a better term, against religion, because I think that's what we need to break down. I mean, when you really think about the problems of the world, what are they based on? They're based on being able to manipulate people through religious beliefs. The Christians think that Israel has to be saved no matter what, and they can do no wrong because they're God's chosen people. Then you have Muslim extremists who believe that they need to fight for their God, and everybody's fighting for each other's gods, et cetera, et cetera. And once we break down all the gods, then people will realize who the true God of this world is, and that's gold, oil, and drugs. And when they realize that, then I think we'll see a change, because people will go, wait a minute, we didn't sign up for this.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't agree with any monotheistic religions. I really don't. I mean, I've got a lot of Muslim friends, I've got a lot of Christian friends, I've got Jewish friends, but I disagree with all of their religious views. They know that I do, and they just, they respect me for that. That's okay. I've even had some interesting conversations in Palestine with Muslims who've been trying to convert me. I've just been going, no. And they're going, well, everything you're saying, this sounds like Muhammad. This sounds like, you know, the teachings of Allah. I said, well, then why do I need Muhammad and Allah if I can get it direct from source? And they're going, well, you know, and I'm going, well, tell me, why do I need someone else to get in the way, you know? And so they respect that. I mean, so people would say, look, you can't say that sort of stuff to a Muslim, they want to cut your head off. Well, it's not true, because I've had these conversations with Muslims. And they know that I do not respect their religion. I don't respect any religion. But I'll respect them, I'll respect their right to believe in a religion, but I don't particularly respect the religion myself. And I'm like that with all religions, and they respect my view, they respect my honesty for it. So yeah, I don't think religion is the way to go. I really don't. I think it's used to externalize power, to take people's power away from themselves and to externalize it. I think that all the power you need is right there within your own heart. And if you weren't capable of your own salvation, then your salvation could never be achieved. I really do. I think that we have the ultimate power within ourselves if we choose to look and see it there. And a lot of religion is to combat people's fear of that power, the personal power that they have. People are very scared of being powerful. They're very scared of ever standing in their power. They're scared of being responsible for themselves. And so religion makes a nice little segue for them. They can just sort of step into that reality and they don't have to deal with themselves as much, you know?
No, you're absolutely right. That's, you nailed it right there, because a lot of people can't face the fact that, oh my God, that horrible thing I did 20 years ago, that was me. It wasn't Satan's influence. That was me. That was something inside of me. Whoa. And on the other side, too, they can't think to themselves, wait a minute, we're here by ourselves. There's nobody else except for me. I'm the only one that I can count on here. There's no imaginary guy in the sky who's going to just shower me with all these blessings. I have to take my own responsibility, change myself, be a good person, move away from that reptilian brain is what I call it, the reptilian mind, the hoarder, the caveman brain, and move to the higher consciousness where you're taking care of others.
Well, yeah, you know, you've got to do that, but you've got to have the choice to go wrong. You've got to have the choice to be evil, or you've got to have the choice to be good. If you didn't have the choice, then what would the experience be for? You know, if you didn't have the choice to go wrong, then how would you ever make the choice to go right? You know what I mean? How would you ever make the choice to grow? How would you ever make the choice to step into a higher frequency if you didn't have the opportunity to step into a lower one? You know, so it serves a purpose. It's got to be there. Evil must exist for good to exist, for spiritual growth to occur. It has to be there. You know, that's the purpose that it serves. And if you really understand consciousness and realize that every aspect of consciousness needs to be experienced, and this includes the ultimate evil, it includes the ultimate good, otherwise consciousness would never know. It would never know what it was about, would never know what it meant, what it was for, what it felt like. You know, how would you ever understand empathy if you had never had that pain inflicted upon you? You know, and if you can look at this as a single consciousness experiencing itself subjectively, which really it is, you know, 7 billion different points of reference for the one consciousness, it's all got to be there. It's got to have every single aspect and every extreme of consciousness there to understand itself. It has to be there. You know, it all serves a purpose, you know, and it's all about choice. It's all about growth, you know. Everybody has the opportunity to be good, or they have the opportunity to be evil. It's about their choice. And you might say, well, it's, you know, some people are this and some people are that, and it's Satan or it's this or it's that. It's not. It's you, and it's just you, the choices that you make, and that's what it's all about.
Right. You know, I've contemplated that good versus evil, and I can't help but go back to the Christian arguments or the religious arguments that they say, well, evil is the absence of good. So light would be, or darkness would be the absence of light. So darkness doesn't actually exist, but it's the light, the absence of light that makes it exist. Wouldn't the same apply to good and evil?
Well, yeah, in many ways, I guess it would. I guess it would. One couldn't exist without the other. And evil is the absence of good. Good is the absence of evil. I mean, you could look at it that way.
But one
can't exist without the other. How would you have good if you didn't have evil? Where would the end of the spectrum be? How would it exist if you didn't have the other? You know,
right?
How would light exist if you didn't have dark? How would dark exist if you didn't have light?
Very true. Wow, it's just a wheel within a wheel within a wheel.
It is, and it has to be there. It's what you do with it. That's the thing. It's what you do with it. It's what your choice of the matter is. That's the thing. It's all down to your choice. Everything we've got on the planet, Chris, it's all down to individual choice. Every single problem that we face is up to individuals as to whether to comply with it or not, whether to do that or not, whether to take the moral high ground or follow legal parameters. Follow legal parameters or moral parameters. That's your choice, you know? Everybody has that choice. You can either do the right thing or you can't. You know, it's up to you. It's up to everybody.
That's all it really comes down to. What choice will you make?
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. That's what I mean. If we could change our perspective and apply it to the world and change our perspective to one of respect, then we could change the world in a single day. You know, if we all started respecting each other and took the moral high ground in all that we did, would change the world in a day. All the wars would stop. All the government corruption would cease. Everything would stop if we just changed our perspective and applied it to the world. But everybody has to do it. That's the thing, you know. But it's got to start somewhere. So you do it. You do it in your little corner of the world, and it'll start ripples in your community. And then it will keep going, and people will do it in their communities, and it'll start more ripples, and eventually all the ripples will join. That's my plan anyway. I can't see any other way out, but...
Oh, I'm right there with you. I've realized that the only person I can change is the one in the mirror. And that's what I tell the audience too. The only person you are responsible for changing is the one staring you in the mirror. Max, exactly. We're just about out of time. We've got about 30 seconds left, but I just wanted to say thank you very much. And we need to do it more often because it's been like a year since we've had you on.
Yeah. It's been a long time. It's good to come on and have a chat with you again, Chris. Thanks for having me on. Thanks to you too, Sherry.
Definitely.
Give us the website really quick.
The website is thecrowhouse.com, and I've got another one called fullcirclenow.net.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, and we're looking forward to the film for sure.
Yeah, when I get it done, if I get it done.
All right, take care.
We love you, Matt.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Mr. Max Egan. Stay tuned. 100th Monkey Radio coming up next right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, followed by Hangar 18.
Yay.
That's when everybody all lets loose and does the exact opposite of what we do on our shows. So it's definitely viewer discretion is advised.
Yeah, no
kids. The children should go to bed for sure.
Definitely.
We have a nice little warning before the show, though. And, of course, tomorrow, lots coming up. The Christopher Everard Show, us. We've got Brooks Agnew, X Squared Radio, Live Free FM, Nathan Frazier. Oh, yeah, 32 Degrees of Insanity with Donnie Gilson after Hangar 18, too.
Uh-huh.
So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we will see you tomorrow. Another jam-packed show. Lots of guests, lots of good information. We love you.
Love you, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.